Accession number 27194, Reel 1.
Mr. Foster, Reel 1. Can you tell me if there was any background of military service in your family?
Not military service. The family were Royal Navy. I had an uncle who served on HMS Renown and Frobisher and other ships, and a cousin who also served on Renown and HMS Teaser, Destroyer. So it was rather a surprise when I was assigned to the Army at the beginning of the war.
Had you done any pre-military or paramilitary training at all?
No, none at all.
Had you been in the Boy Scouts?
Not even the Scouts, but I was a Wolf Cub.
You've been in the Cubs, but you didn't go on the Scouts?
No.
What was your civilian occupation?
I worked in London as a dispatch clerk in the City of London. And when the war started, I came back to Plymouth, where my people were based, and joined up at Higher Barracks, Exeter.
And that was on the 18th of October, 1939?
That's right, yes.
Was this a voluntary enlistment, or had you been called up?
Well, a bit of both, really, because I went to the Plymouth office to volunteer and was told to wait until I was called. And then the calling was to Exeter, where I enlisted. And then the very next day, back to Plymouth and to start training at Seton Barracks, Plymouth.
Did you have a chance to express any preference with regard to what service you wanted to join or what regiment you wanted to join?
No. It was written the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry. So that was it. I accepted, and obviously that was me.
Were you happy about that?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. In a way, it tied up with the books I'd read as a young boy, all about World War One and the infantry, and perhaps a sort of a premonition or something that I would be an infantry soldier. And it was, you know, acceptable, obviously.
Had you ever considered joining the Territorial Army while you were...
Yes, I'd thought about it in London, because a lot of the chaps who worked for the firm that I worked for, Oxford University Press, in Warwick Square in the city, a lot of them had joined the YACAC gunners, but I didn't follow that up at all. No.
Now, you were growing up between the wars when interesting things were happening.
Yes.
Can you remember at what stage you felt that another war was a possibility, and at what stage you thought it was?
Oh, I think when I was about 12 or 13 years old, something like that, there was so much talk and publicity about the power of Germany rising and all the rest of it, and the agitation, that it was a good possibility, obviously, yes, and that we would all be involved in it, yes.
Do you remember any particular event that led you to believe that a war could not be avoided?
Yes, I think about the time of Munich, when it seemed so obvious that nothing was going to stop the Germans from dominating the whole of Europe and the whole of the world. It was pretty obvious then.
Do you recollect having any expectations of having to fight against perhaps Italians or Japanese as well as Germans, or was it just the Germans who were the...
I think it was mainly the Germans. The Italians, somehow you thought that they were not so warlike, not so pushing, But they were there, of course, and talked about, so that was a possibility as well, yes. Mm. But the Germans, that was the main thing. Yeah.
So you saw the Germans as a sort of a cause of war and an enemy?
Yes, oh yes, because it seemed to me that our people were constantly trying to be friendly and making them, trying to sort things out, whereas the Germans were constantly pushing for war and domination.
Mm. Now, you said you'd been doing a lot of reading about the First World War. Can you remember what sort of books you read and which ones were particularly powerful?
Yes. Someone in the family, when I was quite a small chap, 6 or 7, something like that, presented me with a whole batch of volumes. I forget, they were red-backed. Big quarto volumes, all about World War One, and I think the actual name I can't remember now, but the illustrated World War One, all there, about 10 volumes, and I used to pull through this lot. Yeah. It was partly adventure stuff, obviously, but it was a grounding, you know, what war was about. Yes.
Hmm. Did you have any expectations about the way in which the war might be fought?
Well, I read All Quiet on the Western Front quite early, and that was trash stuff, of course, and thought, imagine it would be something like that, except that as I grew older, you know, in teenager sort of thing, there was all this talk about air power, and there was another theory sort of crept in. The thing would be dominated as much from the air and sea as by fighting on land.
Yeah,
yes,
well,
we talked a lot about the Royal Navy and Plymouth home before I went. Before the family moved to London when I was 12 years old. Up to then, we used to go up on the Plymouth Hole regular, and on the Naval Memorial is the name of an uncle of mine who was drowned on the HMS Indefatigable in World War One. So we talked most of the time, yes, up to then, yes, we did.
It sounds as though you started out thinking that if there was another war, it would be against the Germans, it would all be trench warfare, but then as you got older, you started thinking that perhaps the Navy might have some influence.
More influence.
Air power might be.
And much more, yes. Yeah. Navy and sea power and air power sort of took over from the old trench warfare ideas, and it seemed to me that, from what I read in the newspapers and all the rest of it, that we're lagging so far behind in air power, and we weren't building enough ships, and that we were in great danger as a country. Yes.
Do you remember having any thoughts about the possible use of tanks?
Yes, we in the books I'd read all the tanks, and although in normal times we never saw any tanks, I imagined that we had some, and hope they were good tanks and all the rest of it, but I had no idea how far behind we were, behind the Germans in the development of the tanks and keeping them going. Although we'd started tanks in World War One, there was very little talk about, you know, how they developed.
You seem to have had a very clear idea about the general drift of German policy. Mm. Where did you get your idea about the Germans from? Was it from mainly from newspapers, or was it from the radio, or from film news, or from other sources?
Newspapers mainly, but also in the news, Pathé News and stuff. Yes, in the pictures. Yes, yeah, we used to get quite a bit of information there. Yeah. Oh yes, there was plenty of information knocking around, and but most of it was, I thought it was the 1930s, most of the information was sort of warlike, war was going to come, yes, definitely.
So when you went off to enlist at Exeter,
yes.
What happened? You arrived at the office and said, here I am, I want to enlist. And you said you were told to go and wait for call-up. Did you have a medical before you were sent away?
Yes, there was a medical exam, and I remember all these chaps reporting at Exeter, and being in with a blanket, and I think mess tins and a mug, and knife, fork and spoon, and then shortly afterwards having it all taken back again, because we're not quite ready to deal with you chaps home again.
Were you given a blanket and mess tins?
Handed them back in again, the same day, yeah. Issued in the morning and handed back in the afternoon. You chaps, and you have a notice. So after being seen off from Plymouth Station, Northwood Station, in the morning by my family, back under the wars, the same evening I knocked on the door to come back home again. So
it was a short war for young.
It was a short war. They asked if we'd won the war, and I said, "Well, not exactly, but I'm back home again." And stayed back in weeks until reporting to Seaton Barracks, Plymouth.
What was the medical, a thorough one?
Oh, yes, it was indeed, yeah. Yes, yeah, everything was taken care of, yeah. I was A1, very fit chap. Yeah.
How had you kept fit? Were you a sportsman or an athlete?
Not of any great proficiency. I used to play football and running and generally kept moving, but at school we had a very good gym at the Sutton Secondary School that I attended here, a very good gym and all that sort of thing. And in London, when we moved to London when I was 12, I went to Wilson's Grammar School in Camberwell Green, and there they not only all the sports, they were very keen on boxing and swimming, so I kept that up. Mm-hmm.
What about after you'd left school? Were there opportunities to play football or box when you were working in London?
Well, my people came back soon after I started work at 18. So I had a bed sit then in the Waterloo Road for 10 shillings a week, and used to cycle from Waterloo or walk to the city as well.
Yeah, you'd have been moving on foot. That would take you, what, half an hour or something like that to walk?
Yeah, good. Yeah,
you were getting about an hour's exercise a day.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. Okay, so what happened to you when you arrived at Seaton Barracks? You arrived at Seaton Barracks with your piece of paper.
Yeah. And then our time at Seaton Barracks, this was basic light infantry training. We had all light infantry regiments there, chaps to join the light infantry regiments, including, I remember, Highland light infantry chaps in kilts. Anyway, the thing was from first thing in the morning until about 5 in the evening on the square all the time. The general routine was reveille at 6. I think it was all 6:30, and by 7 o'clock we had to be washed, dressed and shaved, and the barrack room, lovely big barrack rooms at Seaton Barracks then, the room had to be swept and polished and all the beds laid out as per book, and be on parade at 7 o'clock.
How many of you were there in the barrack room?
Oh, gosh, big barrack rooms. I think something like best part of a platoon, I would say. Platoon strength, about 30 to 40, yes.
Mm. Was your bed comfortable?
Oh, reasonably. It was the same old pattern as the Boer War iron beds, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was quite good, yeah. We enjoyed it. Well, we were all keen young chaps.
So 6:30 in the morning, the bugles start
right. Yes, reveille.
And there's a frantic rush to the ablutions.
Everything.
Everything, and making the bed block.
Yeah. Right.
Were you in uniform from the first day? Had you been issued with kit on day
one? Yeah, we had battle dress, yes.
Battle dress?
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yes, battle dress. Battle dress had just come in from the old straight up, and, you know, the old
SDs. What did you think of battle dress?
Not much.
You didn't?
I personally didn't think that it looked very soldier-like. And we have pictures of the German soldiers, and they looked more like... Well, I thought they looked more like... our own old World War One uniform, I thought, was good. But battle dress seemed... no. No, I didn't... I didn't think so. Anyway.
You didn't like the look of it?
No.
What about the practical side of it? Was it comfortable for...
Well, yes, it was reasonably comfortable, but somehow I didn't think it looked very soldierly, and not as I'd expected.
What about the boots?
Boots were very good, yes. Oh, yeah, good strong boots. Yes,
I know quite a lot of recruits had trouble with their feet initially because the boots tended to hurt them until they got used to them. Mm. So it sounds like you didn't have that trouble.
No. I think I had good hard feet from all the training I'd already
done. Walking in London.
Yeah.
So you got up at 6:30, you carried out the normal routine chores, and then what happens at 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock breakfast, which had to be over by... I'm sure we were out on parade at 8 o'clock on the square.
Was the breakfast a good one?
Well, basic, but reasonable, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, there'd be sausages and fried bread and basic things. Yes, it was quite good, I thought. And on parade at 8 o'clock, and then we would stay out on the square, whatever the weather, for the rest of the day. Well, except for dinner. We'd come in for dinner, of course. And then smartly out again for the afternoon parades.
What time was dinner?
I think that was 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock, so. Yeah. And did you have an hour for that, or a shorter time?
It wasn't as long as an hour. I'm sure it was more like three quarters of an hour, something like that, yeah.
What were you actually doing when you were on the square?
Mainly drill, and then weapon training. And small arms maintenance and cleaning of rifles, and later the Brens came out. We were issued with Brens a little bit later, Bren guns, but rifles and bayonets, lectures when we stood around on the square in little groups, lectures, and a certain amount of field craft, which took place in the fields opposite Seaton Barracks. A lot of spare ground there. You came down that way from, anyway, Seaton Barracks. Field craft and camouflage, all the basic training stuff.
How long did this take, this initial basic training course?
It took best part of about 3 months, something like that. And then came the great day when we were assigned to our units. So everyone on the square, and it would be parcelled out between the Cornwalls and the other regiments who were going to be made up from us. And I was assigned to D Company of the 5th Cornwalls. And that they were based then at Falmouth, yes.
If I can go back a bit over the basic training and get a bit more.
Mm.
From day one, you'd have started doing foot drill,
yes,
on the square. Do you remember how soon you got issued with rifles? Did you get rifles early in the basic training? Or?
Fairly early, yes. I can't remember exactly when, but it was fairly early. Yes, it was. Yeah, we were given rifles.
Mm. So you got your rifle issued, and with that you'd have had the naming of pulling,
yes,
and...
Yeah. That's right, cleaning.
Did you actually do a course of musketry while you were at Seaton Barracks?
Oh, yes, yeah, we did our firing there, yes, initial musketry course, yes. Range at the barracks.
Range at the Seaton Barracks?
Yes.
What sort of distances were you shooting?
100 and 200. I'm remembering a range at the back of the barracks.
Yes.
Yeah, or 100, 200, 3, up to about 400 yards, I think, yes.
Yeah. Do you remember how many rounds you fired during your initial musketry training?
No, it must have been quite a lot, yes. I'm afraid I wasn't a very good shot.
You weren't?
No.
What was the problem?
I think a lack of the final steadiness in squeezing a trigger. Gentle squeeze. So I got by and got my proficiency pay, but not by any means a marksman.
Were you perhaps a little too quick on the trigger?
Something like that, yeah. I think. Yeah.
And did you do any snap shooting?
Yes.
Anything of that sort?
Yeah, we used to do that, snap shooting. Again, I wasn't terribly good with the rifle, but I did rather better with the Bren gun. I found that the aperture of the Bren, it was simpler to get the centre, the target in the centre of the aperture.
It was an easier sight picture.
Easier to sight, yeah. As opposed to the U of the rifle, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you weren't very comfortable with the rifle as a weapon.
Well, yes, yeah, I sort of took to it. It's just that I wasn't one of the best shots, no. Because there's a fair amount of pride about the chaps about who was the best shot.
A lot of competition.
I was more of the average, sort of, yes.
How were you actually taught? Did you have a one-to-one tutorial arrangement with an NCO? Did you have one NCO per soldier for learning to shoot? Or
no, it was more like a sort of section.
Yes.
Or half a section. Or about seven or six or a dozen chaps. Yes. That was more like it, because there weren't so many instructors to spare. I mean, the regular chaps who were instructing us, who were regulars from the all the regiments. I mean, there weren't enough of them, obviously, to give us one to one. So they did their best with the numbers they had.
And you took the Bren better. Did you do that at Seaton Barracks as well?
Or
did
Sorry?
You learned on the Bren, was that at Seaton Barracks?
Yeah, they were just coming in, the Bren.
Yes.
Because everyone, the instructors were saying, this is the new machine gun, and it's a marvellous gun, and of course it was, the Bren. So we had our initial training with that, yeah.
Did you do weapon training with the grenade at all?
Yes, grenades. Yeah, we had dummy grenades and used to go through all the training with them, yeah.
What did they teach you to do with the grenade?
Well, the priming, and priming obviously, and when to throw, how long, precautions to take, and all that. And we used to throw these dummy grenades about. And a certain amount of training with mines. There were a few of our mines were available for training on.
What did you do with those? Was that planting them, or was it...
Planting them, and also look at prodding for them with a bayonet. We had the long bayonets then, of course, long sticker things. Prodding the ground and clearing a path, and taping it.
What about actually lifting the mine? Did you practice doing that?
Yeah, we did a certain amount of that as well, yes. Yeah, lifting them and making them safe. Yeah.
How did you make a mine safe, if you will?
Well, removing the fuse and the detonator, I mean, sorry. And checking them over.
Yeah. Were you using dummy mines for this?
Dummies, oh yes, dummies. At that stage, gosh, yes. Yeah, very much so. And the grenades, of course, are all dummies. Yeah.
Yeah. How far were you taught to throw the grenade? You know, what distance could you...
Ah, yes. Something like about 40 yards, 40 or 50 yards. We had some chaps who played a lot of cricket and were rather better. They would throw, twice as far as the average chap.
And did you have targets to throw at?
Yes, yeah,
what
there'd
sort
be
of targets. Would you?
Normally, they'd be poles stuck in the ground, sort of thing. Yeah.
Well, you'd have to get the grenade as close as possible for power.
As close as you could to that. That's right. Yeah. Mm.
Another basic one, if you saw, you mentioned doing drill and weapons drill, weapon training. You mentioned fieldcraft. What about map reading? Do you remember?
Oh yeah,
that?
Map reading. Gosh, yeah. A lot of map reading came into it. Yes, it did. And all the law about dead ground and judging distance and quite a lot of that. Yes, it was. And identifying objects and trees were bushy topped or fir trees. There were no other trees. Animals were animals. They weren't sheep or goats in the distance or cows. They were animals. So you didn't commit yourself. that was all quite interesting stuff. And of course, the compass, a lot of compass work.
Was this practical or was it?
Yes, we would go out on night exercises.
Night exercises?
Yes, as training advanced a bit.
Oh, yeah. Was this at Seton or was this later?
There were a few. It just about started in the basic training. Night exercises, yes.
Night navigation?
Well, not too advanced at that stage. I think most of that came a bit later. Yeah.
Did you do any training in tactics while you were doing the basic training?
Well, yes, the sort of section and platoon tactics, yes, of moving in extended line or in column, and platoon section positions, weapon pits, and then the basic thing about digging a position with a place for the brain gun and the rifleman flanking either side and all round with all round defence. Yeah. Incidentally, there are a lot of positions like that in the woods next to us here.
Next to Maryvale Road?
Yeah, next to Maryvale Road, which is Woodland Fort, one of the old Palmerston Follies, built in 1850s for the scare against the French coming back after Napoleon. And that ground was used in World War I and I think again in World War II for training, and you can see the positions dug there.
Where were yours dug? Were yours in the fields around Seton
Barracks? Around Seton Barracks, yeah. That's right, in the field opposite Seton Barracks. A lot of good training ground, so we used to dig away there. Yeah.
What sort of pits were you digging in those days? Did you dig normally a one-man rifle pit or two-man position?
Normally, we used to dig a section position, or half a section, rather.
So that would be
because there would be the brain gunner at the sort of point of the V.
Yes.
Brain gunner with his would be dug rather deeper and with a sort of a bay to hold his ammunition and stuff. And then either side of him in V formation would be three or four riflemen, about three riflemen, so that we had vision and defence all round.
And this would be a single big hole for one section?
Probably two holes for a section.
Two holes for a section.
Yeah, yeah. And then the rest of the platoon would be for all-round defence around, yeah.
Because you'd put the three sections together, wouldn't you, to make
that's
a platoon
right.
position?
Yeah.
With platoon headquarters?
Yeah, platoon in the middle, headquarters in the middle.
Right in the middle of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned formations you practised on tactics in the attack, and you mentioned extended order.
Yes.
And column.
That's right.
Do you remember using any other deployment patterns for?
Well, sort of an arrow formation, yes. We would advance through woods and country was a lot of cover in a sort of an arrow formation, yes, we would. The chap in front, the section.